This is The Strategy Inside Everything. I'm Adam Pierno.
All right, welcome back to another episode of The Strategy Inside Everything. Joining me today from the Windy City is Mr. Colin Mitchell. He is the Chief Innovation Officer at Vice Media Group and the co-president of Virtue, which is the lovely agency inside of or somehow associated with Vice. I know he'll tell us more. Colin, how are you?
I'm really well. Thank you.
It is great to meet you, and I'm looking forward to speaking with you. Before we get going, would you give people a sense of how you got to the role you're in now?
Yeah, it's been a long journey. So I started off, everybody says they sort of stumbled into advertising, you know, this ad, you know, I actually loved it. I had I wouldn't say a sense of vocation, but I remember being asked at 12 what I wanted to do. And bizarrely, I said advertising. So I, from an early age, I always loved it. And I, so started in the UK. I grew up in Scotland, and they had in those days really good training programs. And I was really lucky. I ended up at an agency called BNP, which at the time was a sort of storied agency. John Steele and this other notable planners had come from there. And it's really a fantastic education. I mean, I still use the fundamentals that they taught me there every day. And the people like Les Benet, who did the, you know, the long and the short of it study, he was a cubicle mate of mine for many years. I learned a ton. Sarah Carter, who just wrote a book, she was brilliant. And anyway, I was so lucky. It was an exceptional cluster of talent, an exceptional time. And then when I was about 27, I kind of on a whim moved to New York, expecting to stay there a couple of years. And I worked for a couple of boutique agencies, including Cliff Freeman, who sadly just passed away. And then one thing led to another. Met somebody and settled down. And I had this sort of epiphany in my mid-30s that if I wanted to make a career of this, and it looked like I was going to, I better sort of broaden my understanding. Cliff was very good, but they basically just did TV ads. And so I sort of looked around the industry, and I kind of very deliberately chose Ogilvy and approached them, and they had a job. Because at the time they seemed the most integrated. That was their business model. And I came, it was like one of those, it was very arrogant. I was in my early 30s, and I sort of strutted into this big bad agency with all my small, you know, little boutique agency cool, and thought I got to tell these guys a thing or two. And it was very humbling. I mean, it was kind of a shock. I'd sit for my first, you know, year or more, I'd sit in these meetings just not knowing what people were talking about, because Ogilvy at that time was just, it wasn't an agency. It was we call it now an integrated marketing communications company. But there are all of these experts in direct marketing and technology and so forth that I hadn't encountered before. And so it was a fantastic, I just felt I learned a ton. I ended up staying there over 16 years and rose through the ranks, and I ended up running global planning there under Shelley and then under Miles Young. And it was fantastic. And then out of the blue, I got a call from a woman called Sylvia Lignado, who was sort of the architect of the Dove campaign, who had just become CMO of McDonald's. And I hadn't worked for her, but I knew who she was, and got talking to her. And I had no intention of moving, but I did. And so we moved the family to Chicago, which is where I live now, and ended up working for McDonald's for nearly 5 years, and rose there to around global marketing, reported to the CEO and running a sort of council of the CMOs globally. And that was completely fascinating too. It was an amazing ride because it was a turnaround situation. And then, sorry, I'll speed up, but long story short.
No, this is good.
Okay. And then I anyway, long story short, I was sheltering from COVID just down the road from an old friend of mine, Chris Garbutt, who was chief creative officer of TBWA. And we just got talking about where the industry was going, where marketing was going, and so forth. And over the course of the summer, we cooked up this plan to launch a little agency, which became Platformer, which we did. And then one of our first clients was Vice. And long story short, they made us an offer to acquire us, which we had no intention of doing. We had a 5-year business plan. But we just loved them. We instantly clicked with them. And we thought what they were doing was really exciting. So we joined them about 9 months ago and have been there since.
So there's so much to dig into just in your background. The experience from BMP to Cliff Freeman.
Yes.
How dramatically different was it? Because the creative work was so different.
Yeah. I mean, the whole culture was different. I mean, for me, it was a different city. And BMP was a very particular agency. It was culture. We called it the grammar school kids, who were like, they were not fancy kids, but they're quite academic. And the planners really, I think, bore the culture of the agency. And it wasn't in all the other agencies were in Soho, which was the trendy part of London. It was at Paddington, where the other two big employers were the post office and the sex worker industry. We were out of the stream of the London advertising scene, but I think very connected to real consumers. And that's what BMP drilled into your skull. So in those first few years, my life was like, I was on trains all the time with huge art bags full of foam core, doing focus groups in people's front rooms, which is how we did them in those days. You know, we'd get six ladies in Manchester and have tea.
In their home.
In their home, which is a much better way of doing it. So you get this really sort of fingertip feel for what consumers are like and how they think and how little they care at the end of the day. And you can see a lot of that comes out in Les's writing and Sarah's. They wrote this book last year called How Not to Plan.
Oh, yeah.
It's full of really good tips, but the overall theme is that, you know, people just don't care. You know, you just don't, advertising doesn't work that way. It doesn't compel anybody to do anything. It can suggest something and then people make their own decisions. Any case, so that was one very particular experience. And then BMP was, Cliff Freeman was a different world. I mean, it was on a real high at that time. We swept Cannes 2 years in a row. We did the famous hamster ad for outposts.com and Budget and Staples and some work. It was just, you know, really historic work, I think. And there was amazing people, many of whom I'm still friends with. I was speaking to one last night. But it was like show business, you know. Cliff was, the joke was Cliff was obsessed with humor and there was nobody better than him. And I think, and he had sort of similar sense of sensibility, really populist sensibility, knew what the public liked. But the joke was, he'd go, you know, lions are not funny. Leopards are funny, but lions are not funny.
I've heard that impression of his voice. That's a good one. I worked with someone who was there, I think, around the same time as you. He used to do a pretty good impression.
It was a bit limiting after a while, debating whether, you know, cauliflower was funny, but celery wasn't, and so forth. but he was a genius, and he just had this incredible understanding for the pop, for, you know, how people actually thought about brands. And at BMP, there was a guy called John Webster, sort of the equivalent of that. Again, like Cliff was not humble, but he was kind of very much a man of the people, as was Webster. And Webster didn't do like the big glamorous ads. That was always BBH's domain. We did beer and potato chips and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And at Virtue, you are focused on this idea of being inside. For me, that comes from the world of Vice, that understanding, getting really deep into a subculture or a sub subculture and really understanding it and understanding the motivations and the excitement of what those people inside of it love and what they basically kick out. How does that, I mean, that sounds like a direct line to what you learned at your first job. I could see the connection there of learning, you know, what those ladies in Manchester were thinking is almost the same thing.
I think so. I think there is a direct line there. Throughout my career, I've always liked those sorts of brands more. I mean, McDonald's is a classic sort of street brand as well. So what we mean by insider marketing is we see that the universe is sort of dividing into two very rapidly now. On the one hand, you have old advertising subsidized media, so TV, still very important. But increasingly, you've got gaming and streaming and subscription-based services. So it's a world where people pay to exclude advertising. And obviously, younger people are growing up much more in the second world than the first. And brands, we think, are in this sort of awkward position right now. They have to straddle both. If you're a big brand, you can't just, you know, do events. You have to do mass marketing still, yep. But it's harder and harder to aggregate those audiences. So the notion is that we can help brands build themselves from the inside of culture out. So, you know, to find the places and spaces where people are actually living, where culture happens, and Vice is a real instinct for this. It's kind of amazing in that regard. And place the brands where they're most relevant. So they're not as dependent on paid for advertising, although that's still very important. So yes, it definitely draws on Vice's skills and sensibilities, but it tries to address what's happening in the media universe.
What kind of crossover in approach, if any, is there from the reporting style, the embedded reporting style of Vice, and what you do at Virtue as a planner, or, you know, just thinking about it from a brand lens?
That's a really good question. Yeah, so we've really embraced our Vice brethren. The great thing about Vice is it has this huge network of people who are in, quote unquote, embedded in culture, right? So if you go to Berlin or Tokyo or Los Angeles, we know all of those people. We know the chefs and photographers and nightclub owners. And so we do, I think, really do understand where culture is going. And we have an informal network. It's in journalism, they call them stringers. So stringers are people who know what's going on in a particular town.
And so they know a guy who knows a guy who...
Exactly, right. And so we have that formal and informal network. And we use that a lot to really try and understand where it's really where the culture is going. We call it prediction, you know, not where it's been, but that's where Vice is very, very good. It's just understanding 5 minutes into the future. And the stringers are a big part of that.
And is that just through informal, ongoing conversations around topics and trends and just trying to figure out, if it was here yesterday, it's going there tomorrow? Or how?
Well, we do it formally and informally, and we do it on behalf of clients around specific topics. So we're doing quite a bit of trend work for Coca-Cola. So that's one of our new products that we've developed within Virtue is basically culture consulting. People come to us for that. It's a natural fit. We have some authority in that area. But, you know, a lot of these brands, just the world is accelerating. They have difficulties seeing around the corners and they want help with that. And so we've kind of turned it into a product, into a service, and we could do long-term consulting gigs, or we could just do reports, and clients come to us for both. And that's a big door opener. You know, Coca-Cola came to talk about, you know, youth trends, but stayed because then it sort of begs the question, well, what do we do about it? And we have answers.
All good research does, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And so I remember maybe this was 5 years ago or a little more, 7Up really investing in music culture. And they moved away from a lot of the advertising they had been doing for the same reasons you're saying. And they had gone into concert sponsorship and festival sponsorship to reach music fans, and especially around kind of subgenres of music, EDM and other types of dance music. And I wonder, you know, how small do you go to yield insights that can be applied more broadly? Because if you're talking about a brand as big as 7-Up or McDonald's, like, it has to still scale.
Yes, of course. Of course. No, we're trying to get out of those niche little areas. I mean, actually, I think our sweet spot is bigger companies. You know, it's like the companies we've been working with do talk to very, very big audiences, which is what I've done my whole career. I've always, that's just been my space. But it's there is this notion that there are people a year ahead. You know, if you talk to them, you get this sense of where life is going. So we you know, that intelligence gathering is important. But the more important thing is we can execute. So if you want to connect a brand, and there are many through music, we do quite a bit of that. We have this publishing brand called Noisy, which is like you know, kind of like a Pitchfork, and we can do a concert series with that. We own this fashion and design magazine in London called ID, which is super inside. It's like, and so we could do a fashion event with you through that. Or we have another digital publishing brand called Munchies, which is about food. So we could do a food festival through that. You know, so we use our publishing, in particular, publishing capabilities. That's an example of how we can place brands in culture. But there are other, I mean, the best way to think of Vice is it's been through so many metamorphoses, but it started off as this punk scene 25 years ago. But it's really now a sort of mini Disney. That's how I describe it, meaning it's an integrated marketing group. And what Disney is to children, you know, it has this sort of rough target, but it offers a lot of different services, theme parks, cruises, movies, TV, and so forth. So that we are to youth and emerging culture. And there are five business units. There's digital publishing, there's news, and there's studios, which makes content for Netflix and Amazon and so forth. And then there's Pulse, which is a production company, which makes music videos and commercials. And then there's us. And we are the sort of portal for brands to access all of that.
Yeah, and they can use those spaces as even almost a pilot or a test. You could say, we'll try this food festival, and then they could scale it out. Once you've done that successfully, they could say, oh, okay, there's a value to investing in food.
We're working with a major apparel brand right now on a concert series, and that's exactly what they want. They want a replicable packaged product. So we do some concerts in the US, and then that's, as I learned at McDonald's, that's the way global organizations work. You have to sell that through the system, right? And we can help brands do that also. I mean, the internal selling.
How much did what you're doing at Virtue and what Vice proposed align with what you started when you dreamt up Platformer? Is it the same idea? And they said, we like what you're doing, like, let's work together and do it together more formally? Or did it changed and evolved a lot?
Well, I think what they wanted, what was missing at Virtue was the sort of just the marketing strategy bit. And both Chris and I got deep into that. So it's all very well, and not every media brand, and certainly every publishing brand, is trying to reach out to marketers to get dollars, right? So you'd see a lot in New York Times, many other brands are playing with these services. And we see this massive trend as part of the reason we joined was clients are going around agencies, disintermediating agencies, are going straight to producers and makers of culture and want to work with them directly. And who's better place to do that than Vice? The problem with that is you need people inside the organization who speak brand, right? And do it at a pretty high level. That's really what we built, what we brought and what we built, I think, is some discipline and structure around the strategy of brands and building brands.
Yeah, and the language of brands, that's absolutely
a lot of it's language, a lot of it's just jargon and terminology and the concepts. And that sounds silly because it's just branding at the end of the day, but it is, it doesn't work if you just throw TV. And I'm learning that working inside a media company, it's the first time I've done it. It's radically different way of seeing the world, the way their timelines, the way they develop product, the way they sell product, the way they think about audiences are all very, very different to the way you do in an agency. So a lot of it's translation, between these different worlds.
Yeah, that's a huge departure from brand longitudinal thinking to publishing editorial calendars, where longitudinal is like the 3-month editorial calendar.
Well, sometimes it is. But certainly for news, the cycles are completely different. But for movies, they're much longer.
True.
So to make a movie, which we do a lot of, documentaries and features and whatnot, that's a 3 to 4 year proposition often. And the life cycle of a CMO is usually 18 months to 2 years. So it's a very good example of where I think we can help clients is every pitch deck in the world has a slide with a Netflix logo on it. And they say, well, we're going to make a content series with Netflix. And it's nonsense. Netflix has never in its history made a content series with Rolex or any other brand. That's the whole point of Netflix. And also, even if you did want to do a show with Netflix, you don't have 3 or 4 years to wait if you're a big client. But there are many other things you can do. You can work with a film that's already in production and sponsor it, or you can produce a shorter term content series, or you can work with a media company like ours, where we sell both the space and the concept. So that's a large part of what we're doing is that your clients will rock up and say, we need to do more with content or whatever. And there's a lot of just explaining how that actually, what are the mechanics of making a TV series and how can that work with the frameworks that a marketing department works with?
Is it strengthened from traditional, the agency model? If you're at a holding company and you get an idea to partner with Nat Geo for your client, and now you have to bring that third party in to do that translation and produce the thing, and now you're kind of negotiating, or you're almost a passenger as well from a brand strategy perspective.
Yeah.
Is it better to be integrated?
Oh, I think so. I mean, that's what's so, I mean, we still do that as well. And, people are generally nice and want to help, but it's just cumbersome, right? You've got the media agency, you've got the advertising agency,
exactly,
publisher, and the client. So there's a minimum of 4 parties in the mix, all of which have their own agendas. And that's why I think a lot of clients are going directly to the makers. They want the makers. And partly because I think they feel the makers have an instinctive understanding of the culture and not just us. I mean, I'm talking about Disney. I think one of the most interesting launches of the last several years was Ryan Reynolds, what he's done. There's an example of, it's been fabulously successful. Somebody instinctively understands where the culture is going, has a instinctive feeling for branding, but can do things quickly.
That's what's more, I know his fame opened doors, but his ability or that firm's ability to turn things in 24 hours capitalize on moments and culture that they're short windows, man. You don't get months to think about them.
No, and you need to know people. If you want to make something, you need to be able to pick up the phone and get 5 people, get a crew together that night very often, which we can do.
And you have some of that same flexibility because you're plugged into a news organization that is used to.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just news. News is just part of what we do. Actually, we work just as much with studios. So that's making content. And then publishing. So this is all these. We also acquired Refinery 29. Mm-hmm. So fantastic. There's real talent in that group. And with them, we might work on an event. But yes, it definitely comes from those different skills. And that's sort of familiar to me. Remember Ogilvy, that humbling moment. It's sort of the same thing. It's been an education for me. I guess that's what we're all looking for in our careers, right? We're looking to learn something new. And I'm definitely doing that right now. I thought I knew, my wife's a journalist. I thought I knew news. I thought I knew publishing, but I didn't at all.
Yeah. Now you're inside seeing the gears move.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a fascinating thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's always exciting from a planning perspective to see something from the inside out. That's the thrill.
Yeah.
And Colin, at the top here, you mentioned the training you got at BMP. And I wonder, as we're talking about learning, are you applying any, or are you training your teams or people in the Virtue or Vice organizations a little bit more in brand, formally or informally, or is it mostly just through projects?
We're trying to do that. It's a different culture. It's a super nice culture, actually. I thought it would be really austere and cool, but it's not. It's warm and friendly, and people are really nice. So, but there is a hunger. I mean, I think this is a big problem for the industry, is a generational shift where people just weren't trained on basics. And it's two-way. There's lots of things they teach me, for sure. But yes, I'm trying to do that. I've made a major push at McDonald's for that. At Ogilvy, we took that very seriously. David Ogilvy called it the agency, the teaching hospital of advertising. And I've always felt that there's sort of a moral duty almost. I was the happy recipient of so much good learning from so many good teachers, that there's sort of a duty to pass that on. So yes, we are a culture that doesn't stop to think very much. It's much more of a doing, it's a making culture, the opposite of BNP in that regard. They still want it. Clients want it, and our people want it.
That's great that there's receptivity. It sounds like the culture there is about learning anyway, in general, like learning from any subgroup.
It's a pretty inquisitive culture, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. How do you compare that desire for the part of brands to work with makers with kind of the boom and bust of the influencer world that... It hasn't fully busted, but like doing that at scale, but you could see the writing on the wall that people are like, wait a minute, is this valuable? I'm not sure.
So that's really interesting. So here's what we think about that, because we do have a point of view, is I think three things are converging. And it's one of our four pillars, what we call people. So there's three levels: celebrities, creators, and what we call communities. So celebrities are celebrities, and they're becoming much more important in the world of marketing, with Ryan Reynolds and McDonald's, with the celebrity meals promotion, which has been widely copied throughout the industry. So celebrities are much more important because of the reasons we spoke at the beginning, because eyeballs are in a different place. And then creators are very, very important. The problem is it's a world of bullshit, right? So there's no standards. There's a lot of fraudulence. And I mean, you probably get less legal letter for saying this. But without naming names, everybody knows what's going on in that world. And we know genuine influencers. We know the nightclub owners and the chefs in Berlin or LA or Miami or wherever it might be. So I think we're able to offer more genuine influencers or creators. And then there's community. So that's really what used to be somewhat pejoratively called followers. We think of them as communities that can build round brands. And what's the difference between a follower and a community member? If anybody's interested, we'll happily take them through that. But the basic difference is participation.
Yeah, investment, right?
Yeah. So and participation by the community member. So our proposition, and I think we have some natural authority in this area, is to say we'll take those three things together: celebrities, creators, and communities, and think of them holistically in order to build the community around the brand. And it's been super powerful for clients. Every client said, yes, that's what we want. We want to do that. So I think to answer your original question, I think the sort of the influencer, the creator economy or the influencer market is, I think, much better understood as part of this bigger trend, and certainly much better mobilized on behalf of marketers in that way.
Yeah, and you referenced the celebrity meal trend that McDonald's started, and I wonder if the next phase is more about partnering to create. The brand still wants to be in control of some content. We want it to work well with content that creators make on our behalf, or yeah, a partnership, so that those things are speaking to each other in culture, and it doesn't feel the creators are over here on their channel and we're over here on our channel.
Right. And the bottom layer as well, the community. So they have, when I say participation, that's the key. And we discovered that at McDonald's was the key to that was ordinary customers felt that they were part of the experience. It also worked particularly well for McDonald's because there's this truth about McDonald's that, you know, Kanye and the president, Trump at least ate McDonald's, but so do you and I, and so does everybody. And we've kind of starved for that sense of connection with each other. But that's why celebrities is particularly appropriate for that brand. But we found generally with our promotions at McDonald's, if you don't have this sense of participation, if you give people, even though most people don't do it, if you give people some way of participating in the brand, they can vote on something, or they can send in an idea, or they can comment, or they, you know, some mechanism for that. You know, 97% of people won't, but the sense that you can is very, very important, that the brand belongs to the community.
For those people that want to invest more than dollars, give them a sign that there's things they can do to be a part of it, more than just a customer.
Yes, and I know, and Byron Sharp is very down on this notion. You know, 20 years ago, Douglas Atkins called it cult brands. And, you know, in the Sharp theory, you know, with low levels of interaction and low levels of loyalty, most people aren't attached. But that is true. I certainly believe that to be true. That was the BNP theology as well. However, people do like to see this. They do like the sense that it belongs to them, that they can participate in it. And it just makes it feel bigger and more culturally important.
And I like that you brought up Sharp. And I think both things can be true. I hold both of those dissonant ideas in my head that I have to be recruiting new customers because loyalty is very low. But by demonstrating to my few loyal customers that they have some stake in the brand bigger than themselves, that is a mechanism to recruit new customers who wish for that same type of thing or observe it and say, oh, that person really likes it and therefore it must be worth trying. I think that's a way in for people.
Right. And this is something that's been demonstrated in the last 10 years. So where we called it users or sellers. So if you look at the new age brands, they've all done it this way. So the traditional way of marketing a brand is you focus on a non-user and you try and either increase your awareness or you persuade them to try the product. The new age brands give the product away in some form and give or certainly an experience that wraps the brand and pulls people in and they try it and like it and sign up. So premium products are the, you know, best example of that. But it's true of all of these new age brands. I think Dollar Shave Club, Airbnb, which Chris worked on very closely, Tesla and so forth. If you think about Tesla versus a Ford or a Volkswagen, it goes about its marketing very differently. And it's based on this community, this sense of community. If my sister-in-law drives a Tesla and she talks to very little else, you know, so every time... Every time she picks me up from the airport, it's like a 30-minute sales pitch, right? Yeah. That's what you want to get going.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so in that case, both things are true. It's interesting.
Yes. I think people, absolutely. I think, and Byron Sharp is an extremist, but both things are true. People don't care. They're not loyal, but they do like to, they do like the sense of participation. And also you can get people to become your loyalists, not loyalists, your, the advocates can work as recruiters for the brand.
Yeah, and I think we're both in agreement with Sharp that that's pretty rare and hard to do. I mean, you cited Tesla. That's a pretty big investment. It's hard to get someone to do that on, you know, like cookies.
But it's not. But no. All of these DTC brands, we're working with Dollar Shave Club, which is sort of, it was an amazing brand and the original.
Yeah, they were the first in that wave.
Yeah. And I think that all changed 10 years ago with them and all of their followers, is you can do this on a micro scale and then grow it very quickly. And if the last 2 years of COVID has taught us anything, it's taught us the basic mathematics of, you know, epidemiology. You know, if you get if one person tells two people who each tell two people, you know, it can spread very, very fast.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about a lot of the examples you gave were about chefs, and I brought up music. And so those are more music festivals. Those tend to be in person and live. There's a lot of buzz about the metaverse. But I wanted to hear really quickly about your thought on insider thinking as it relates to digital cultures and digital communities. We talked a little bit before about Roblox, which I'm witnessing firsthand with my own family. But I wanted to see what your thoughts are on how Insider applies to those communities.
Well, there's nothing more inside than these communities, right? That they, I mean, and talk about creating what I said at the top of the call about dividing media universes. And this is like almost a hermetically sealed world, and it's very hard for brands to get in there. I mean, it's been done, you know, Travis Scott launched on Fortnite and so forth, and the, some great moves and so forth. But we think this is huge. I mean, this week's news about Microsoft acquiring...
Oh, it's amazing. Blizzard.
That's tectonic. This is happening much faster than anybody, including us, imagined it would. So you need to be in there, and we've got more calls than we can handle. We've got like four projects. We did the Coke NFT, which was one of the first ones, which mm-hmm. we're very proud of, and that opened our eyes to how powerful this is. We've got some, can't disclose it today, but later this week we've got some exciting news coming about our own presence in the metaverse. Oh, cool. as a brand, and we're working with everybody, and every client wants to talk about this. And I think it's not just a trend. It's a tectonic shift. And there are hundreds of questions like, should I be in Decentraland? Where should I be? How do I pay for this? How do I make it safe, brand safe, and so forth? We're like everybody else trying to learn that very, very quickly.
You mentioned Travis Scott, but I look at Chipotle that put a virtual store in Roblox. And I thought, that's it? That's what you're doing? You're going to put a virtual store in there? That seems like, it was more than that, but it seems.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of land grabbing. It's just, the point is, I mean, that, you know, good luck. Good for them. They did it quickly and they did it first, but they're going to find out. I'm sure they thought of this. They're very sophisticated.
They are very smart. Yes.
But, you know, what do you do with that? Can you buy food? Can you work there? Can you, how does that interact with the rest of that universe? But I think they chose correctly. I think Decentraland is the right place for them to be.
Yeah.
Or were they in Roblox?
They were in Roblox, I think.
Okay, so that's interesting. So, you know, much bigger audience right now, but it's a closed world. So one of the fundamental questions you have to ask is, do you go into an open world or a closed world? Our view is the open world, although now it has smaller audiences, ultimately will be the place brands want to be.
Yeah, and I think that's the big question is, do we want to leverage an existing community in a closed world, or do we want to build something of our own that's decentral that we can build roads into? Yeah, yeah. Well, Colin, very nice to have a chance to speak with you today. Thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
And where can people find you online? I know they can find out more about Virtue at virtueworldwide.com, and I'll obviously link to that in the show notes, but where can they find you?
You can, probably the best way is to email me at colin.mitchell@vice.com. I don't have my own site, but you come to the Virtue site. There's some good content there.
Yeah, it's really rich. I spent some time there getting ready for this and learned a lot. So.
And there's more coming. We're going to publish much more of our understanding of where things are going.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. Great talking to you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Strategy Inside Everything is produced by me, Adam Pierno. If you liked what you heard, please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps. For more information about me, Adam Pierno, you can go to adampierno.com. There's information about my books, my speaking, and my strategy work. Have an idea for a guest? Send it my way. Just go to adampierno.com and you'll find a form there that'll help you connect. Thanks for listening.